I'm a total optimist by nature, and nothing wrong with having a moment of doubt. And yes, I had them. But whether or not that, how long does that doubt remain the center point of your actions and thoughts? That's the bigger thing.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? You're in for a treat today. Wow. Is the only word I can use to describe our guest today. Today's guest is inspirational. His story is powerful and his hope is potent. This week, now I'm sitting down with Chef. Some know him as Bionic Chef, entrepreneur, and speaker, Eduardo Garcia. Some of you have heard of Eduardo's story from his documentary, Charged. And if you haven't, add it to the list. You got to watch it. It's worth it. And also, you're in for a serious treat today. I'm telling you, Eduardo shares wisdom from his experiences, his sudden change in life's expected circumstances, going from being a chef to then losing his arm, but continuing to move forward because he saw something in front of him that he wanted to pursue. We can all learn from today's message. I know I did, and I shared that with him. You can hear that during today's episode. Well, hey. I'll just jump into it. It's time. Are you ready? For this week's episode of Hope Still Wins, here's my conversation with Eduardo Garcia. As I just mentioned, what an incredible opportunity to have Eduardo on this podcast. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ben.
The whole purpose of this podcast is to relate through human story. For those out there listening that maybe are not familiar with your story, do you mind just giving a background about who you are and how you've gotten here today?
Well, nice to meet everyone here, and thanks for spending your time with us. You know, I largely lived in Montana for the last 34 years, born in California. Grew up here, grew up in the mountains, grew up with a heavy influence in the outdoors, surrounded by nature. And for the most part, I don't really know what's normal. So I won't say that I grew up normal or not normal. I grew up in Southwest Montana, you know, with a small family, mom, an astrologer, learned the value of working at a young age, just simply to empower the life I wanted to have, buying a fishing rod, buying a bike. Seemed we needed some cash. People would pay you to mow their lawns. But at a young age, it kind of was empowered by our own ability through recognizing that. And so in high school, wanted to remain in position to direct my life. And so started flipping burgers at 15 just as a job and kept cooking, you know, kept cooking. Really, it worked for me. I had the energy to hang in the kitchen. And for the most part, you know, it was a good starting career. I went to school for cooking, and then worked professionally as a yacht chef for 10 years, which is where I really fell in love with food. And then in the last 10 years, I've taken my career off boat, back onto land, moved back to Montana, started a food company called Montana Mech, and then of course, well, I say of course, but folks here. May not know me or know of my story, but I have started to work in storytelling. Not always with food as the center language, but oftentimes human ability, human the value of living big, dreaming big, and not giving up seem to be common through life. To a lot of what, a lot of the storytelling, whether it's through television or podcasts like this, or you know, I also get asked to work as a public speaker in the aspirational, inspirational space. So I feel like today, who everyone's getting here is you're getting a 40-year-old guy stoked to work as a professional chef still. And also I recognize that it really doesn't matter what industry you're in. We all have the opportunity to affect those around us. And so I don't turn up opportunities when they come like this to share and talk and connect.
There is a movie about you that came out in 2017 called Charged. I watched it last night. I watched the trailer again about 5 minutes before jumping on with you. It's an incredible story that you have. One of success and then life's unexpected changes have happened to you. If you don't mind a bit, do you mind walking through your story of how you went from the successful chef? You're still a successful chef, but in between, life took a turn.
Yeah, no, I don't mind sharing it all. Everybody here can relate to this, you know, in some way. Life throws you curveballs, and I think that's the nature of it. Not that life's out to get us. It's just we don't live in, you know, I feel like we forget it. I think we forget how variable living actually should be and is. You know, it is really at the whim of nature. We see that every year, whether you live in the, you know, tornado alley, whether you live in, you know, seismically active place, life can always change. And so for me, I came home from yachting for 10 years, right? I worked as a yacht chef for a decade. I realized that my interest in cooking was just graduating from 10 to 20 people, the family I was working with every day on the boat. And I wanted to share my interest, my passion, my belief in food as a vehicle to better living, like, you know, dedication and relationship with food. If you're just passive with food, then I guess it's just passive. But I wanted to share my interest in doubling down and putting more time into the food we eat. And while coming home from the yacht, started a company called Montana Mex, be sort of one vehicle that I could share in the form of food products. We make organic sauces and seasonings. You know, we have a store and are nationwide in certain grocery stores. I was like, okay, well, that's one approach. That's how I can continue to connect with people in the food space, bringing products to their cooking, their creation in the kitchen. And then on the other side of it is food as well. The idea came up that I love to cook outside. I love to spend my time outside. Therefore, why head in when you can start a fire and cook outside? And that has very much been part of how I've been as a little Boy Scout kid to now as an adult, you know, and I share it with youth and elders. And I find myself cooking outside with lots of people throughout my life. And so I stepped into pursuing a TV show. And what you don't see in all of that is that as you're putting all of your eggs in those baskets and you're aligning your career to make that shift off the boats back onto land, you're bringing on investments to start your business. You know, no one tells you that you're going to get electrocuted by 2400 volts while you're out taking a hike in the woods one day. You know, weeks before signing a contract with the Food Network, weeks before life is going to continue happening in all these other ways. And that is very much my story as it relates to the documentary Charge. You know, I got electrocuted while hiking in 2011, October of 2011. And the next couple years were pretty deep, intensive recovery time periods for me. And, you know, at some point I heard too many times from my manager, agent, friends, family, and then it was really the surgeon that saved my life. That was my tipping point to kind of come out of my shell a little bit and believe that there was an opportunity to share this loss and pain to maybe in part as a part of a cathartic action, but also to help others, right? Like we can help share where a mistake has occurred where a tragedy has occurred or person bottling them up. And so Charged really came about on the heels of that injury and on that recovery. But more importantly, I think Charged exists out there. I mean, it's on Amazon Prime. It's in multiple languages, distributed internationally, and has been viewed hundreds of thousands of times. And as a production team, we are so grateful that folks continue to find the film, share the film, learn, and feel supported by the film. That was the number one goal for us. 22 surgeries later, just pulling yourself off the forest floor and going and finding help, surviving that kind of an injury is such a testament to that we don't have it all figured out. And there's so much in this world that is just up to the world at large. It's not up to us. It's up to us what we do if we get given a chance, get given a shot, you know? So thanks for the kind words on the film.
Yeah, it's powerful. And that isn't a great word to put behind it, because there's so many things within that film that can inspire somebody. Because as you said, and I love it, as you started, so many people can relate with something similar to your experience. It's going to be very unlikely that it's the same thing, right? Your accident isn't extremely common, but so many people have those curveballs, those light switches, those things that readjust. One of my favorite questions during this whole thing, this podcast, is to identify your story and to see kind of where those pivot points are. And then just ask you, at what point in the process, was it while you were on the forest ground, miles away from anybody else, when you picked yourself up and you walked to help? Was it in the hospital? Was it after healing? When was it for you, and what was the process like for you to say, I'm going to keep going forward? I'm going to continue to make something of this. This accident is not going to keep me down.
Yeah, that's such a critical question. Good question, and such a critical time period for anyone going through the crux move of beginning or starting something, whether it's in the face of adversity or not, right? And the way that it worked for me was a combination of having an incredible amount of support. I had my partner at the time, my family, all at my bedside immediately. I had some of the best critical care in the burn world. University of Utah is just known internationally. And so I had a lot of support. That's one. Two, I was ignorant as to the true gravity of what my body had just gone through, how close to death I truly was. And so because I didn't realize how dicey and how razor thin that sort of life line was for me, it gave me the opportunity to just kind of keep looking to next week or the following week or the day I'd get discharged. How was I going to get back to all the life pieces? And so, yeah, a lot of help, not understanding what the journey ahead would really be like and how grave my situation was. And then naturally, I am a hungry for life type of individual. I really believe that every day is a gift and an opportunity to go get your heartbeat raised, you know, go get whatever it is that you want living to be defined as for you. And so it was a pretty potent mix that helped keep my chin up. Good, bad days, you know, for sure. But never once did I even consider throwing in any towels, I guess. So it was pretty immediate for me.
In a similar breath then, a similar question, but to expand on it, would you say those same factors are the thing that kept you going forward? Is that where you got your resilience? Was the support, and correct me if this word's offensive, but that naivete towards the severity of your injury?
No, those were all contributing factors, immediately contributing, right? And then the patient's always the patient still, right? So like, you're Ben, I'm Eduardo, you know, when we show up to any given scenario, whether it's a tragedy, a trauma, or a celebration, we bring every day on earth to that party, to that equation, to that scenario. And so I have always sort of been the jump first, look later, go for it type of individual. And so naturally, I think when my body was telling me, you better fight because now's the time not to give up. I think I already was there. Like, that's just naturally, you stub your toe, I'm going to walk it off, you know? So that, and then, you know, the support part's really key, right? Some folks don't maybe have all the support in their life they need for whatever the obstacle, whatever the challenge, whatever the moment. And gosh, I cannot express how grateful I am, right? That I had the squad surrounding me professionally and personally. You know, my mom says that there were people around the world praying for you, you know, and whether you are spiritual or religious or believe in the power of prayer, I think that we can all commonly share in the belief of intentionality, just setting your whatever, however many energy pieces you got to work with, put them all towards the same chip pile. You could not, but, you know, my guess is like the big winners put a lot of their energy towards believing in something happening. And so there was sort of just a resounding amount of that energy in our hospital room because of the family I was raised by. And then of course the professionals, they're positive. I mean, they're there to save your life anyway. So they feed off of that. So there was just a lot of percolating energy. And then, like I said, you get notes from folks wherever they were, just saying, we're thinking about you, we believe in you, you've got this, you know, and you gotta take all that to heart. You know, sometimes it's so easy when you're the one, I've been here, where you're looking at someone in ICU when you're not the patient, and you're like, oh, what am I going to write that's going to make the difference? Or what am I going to write that, how am I, write the note, write the letter, send the flowers, send anything. When you're locked down in ICU and you can't see past your PICC line, and, you know, and you know, your hospital room, anything from the outside world is this thread that you grab onto. And it does help you claw out. So, yeah.
I wonder, because there's going to be somebody listening to this that can relate at some level. Did you ever have moments of doubt?
Yeah, I still do. For sure. I mean, and those are necessary. Those are the yin to the yang. They're the, you can't, I'm a total optimist by nature. And without moments of doubt, nothing wrong with having a moment of doubt. And yes, I had them. But whether or not that, how long does that doubt remain the center point of your actions and thoughts? That's the bigger thing. And at some point, doubt is meant to be there for a minute, second, so that you consider, what's the big picture? What am I missing? What am I not taking into account? And at some point, you still have to do. And I always say, if you're going to show up at a dance, show up believing someone wants to dance with you. Not showing up believing no one wants to dance with you. You know, a much higher chance of getting twirled around the dance floor, showing up believing that's where you're going to be in a matter of time, or just go dance by yourself, you know? And so I think that whole, you got to believe in your own wind.
Is that how you got through the doubt? I mean, there's so many instances where we've gotten notes, or we've interviewed guests who've lived through long seasons of doubt, long seasons of heaviness, of confusion, of not knowing where to go next.
Anyone listening is going to have their own way to make it through doubt and or a bottleneck and or blockage in your workflow, your life flow, your personal flow. I'm always a big fan of community, and so I often air my dirty laundry or air my broken, you know, engine and get it out there. Let everybody know. Like, first step is take ownership. So, okay, truck's not working. Been sitting there for 3 years. Kick another tire, or I could just tell someone it's not working because it's not working, right? Like, I'm not going to convince it. Just take ownership of where you're at. Okay, I'm in the ICU. I've had 15 surgeries. I got 5 coming. I've been here for 40 days. This is real. Like, taking ownership of that was a big thing. To be fair, from my experience, it was years before I took full ownership of what this is to be an amputee and a survivor of a major traumatic burn. So the next step after taking ownership for me was then communicate. Start telling your friends, your family, your neighbors, your partners, your business partners, your investors. The most scariest people to tell are the ones that you need to tell the quickest. You know, let everybody know who you are once you've taken that sort of inventory assessment of what you are, what you have to bring. Then tell someone, let them know, okay, because then they know who you are, what you're bringing, and then they know where your problems are at, where your strengths are at. And then the third step I usually like to approach is to invite folks to collaborate at that point. So, and I remain open to any suggestions or any help. So when feeling doubt, I would often, if I got stuck, and I started to notice that for weeks, I was just thinking about the same persistent like thorn, I'd get it out. Hey, am I crazy for thinking this? Here's where I'm at. Let someone else bring their ideas, their perspective. Perspective is one of the best prescriptions we can bring into any tough time, is a new viewpoint, right? You have to invite others in. Otherwise, more often than not, we don't feel compelled to just tell people what we see, because that's a little too forward. That's a little too touchy. That's a, you know, and so I feel like we have to be our own best advocate. Let people know you're looking for help.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee. You know, you and I could have sat down before the accident and had a great conversation. And probably had one where lessons were taught. You had an incredible story to tell, but that's not what, you know, we're not sitting here today after or before it. And I wonder if is there any resentment for you? And I did the same thing, right? We get onto the podcast, we're talking about you, we're talking about your career, we're talking about the people you impact. And in order to, for it all to make sense, now we have to also talk about the time that you got electrocuted. And also, as you mentioned, losing your left arm as a chef, it's a big deal. Is there any resentment that is now coming up so often in conversation and so often from people wanting to understand you better?
Definitely not resentment. I would say that I'm 10 years past my injury date. And so there was a saturation point year five where I just needed a break from doing these podcasts and doing interviews about the same headline. And then in more recent years, and which is why I'm here, is I realized it's always a good day to try and help another person out. And I find a lot of benefit in having a conversation about something that occurred 10 years ago, because today my thought process will be different than it was yesterday in some way, in some degree. And so these are an opportunity for me to continue to grow. And so, and I genuinely, I guess the proof's in the pudding. This is encouragement to anyone listening, is I love hearing back from everybody. I love saying, I mean, this is, Ben, you're sharing your platform with me, and it's an opportunity for me to selflessly share with some precious time, but in the hopes that someone who hears this needed those three kind of pearls of wisdom, or needs to go see Charged, or somehow is lost in their food journey and like, wow, you're a chef, and with a physical change like losing a left hand, you figured it out still. Okay, what's keeping me from my healthy food journey? There could be any number of reasons. The big box of crayons is totally applicable. I don't know how anyone's going to find value here, but I know that by just showing up as my genuine true self and engaging in a conversation with you, someone's going to listen to this and their life will be supported by it. Well worth it.
I think so too. And I ask that because, you know, pain, I speak from my own experience, but pain sometimes, vulnerability outside, like within that pain can be difficult. It can feel almost sometimes more isolating. People just don't understand. People don't get it. People are identifying you as one thing and you see yourself as a different thing. There's somebody I'm just imagining that will hear this, who has gone through that curveball, that life change, that pivot, is sitting in it and is one maybe, you know, okay, for example, Eduardo, I just had my best friend diagnosed with ALS. I've talked about it many times on Hope Still Wins. He's 35 years old. This just happened. I was there in Boston a week ago when it happened, right? So he is talking about it. He needs to. I mean, I guess there's like a limited amount of time that he probably has left here on earth to advocate, to try to find a cure, to believe in a cure, to share his story. But at the same time now, he's gone from being the salesman, the good-looking dude, the great husband, to now being the guy with ALS that everybody wants to talk about ALS. I'm just imagining that that's at some level heavy. It adds maybe a burden, maybe it doesn't for him. I don't want to speak for him. But sometimes in these moments of pain, it can be difficult to talk about it. But you just said two questions ago that vulnerability was something that was really healthy for you. Was there any level of vulnerability that you kept in that you didn't feel was wise to communicate? Was there any lessons learned through that vulnerability that you would think somebody would benefit from hearing? Or was there any surprising gifts as you became more vulnerable and shared with your friends and your family that came from those times of opening up?
Sure. great call out, and high five to you for picking up on vulnerability as just one of these superpowers or, you know, tipping points for anybody. I grew up a Latino in a spiritual community, a very conservative town in Southwest Montana. At some point, I realized I couldn't keep just hiding who I was. I was mostly living out my best life as a teenager and a kid, but there was a lot of, you know, there were parts of me that still were laid dormant because I didn't know if I could trust them out in public. I didn't know how they'd be perceived, right? And even to the point where my name, Eduardo, at some point, like 8 years old, no one in the class could say it. So I changed my name to Edward. My twin brother, Eugenio, changed his name to Eugene. My sister changed her name. We all changed our names to something that in English would be recognizable and comfortable for everyone else, right? 18 years old, I leave Montana, 18 years old, I'm in Seattle, I'm at a restaurant. I walk in my first day and the Honduran dishwasher asks me in Spanish, says, "What's up?" And then he says, "¿Cómo te llamas? What's your name?" And I naturally respond in Spanish because he asked me in Spanish and I speak Spanish. And in that moment, at 18 years old, I feel like my best self crystallized and landed with its like cape and goggles and like superpower gloves on. It's like, yeah, man, you are Eduardo Garcia. Like, that's you. You're not Ed or Eddie or Edward. You told the world you were that to make everyone else more comfortable, you know? And so at some point, sharing with my mom, "Hey, mom, here's where I've made some major mistakes. Here's where I got mixed up in drugs and alcohol. Here's where I did this and this." It allowed me to have an open, potent relationship with my mom that wasn't holding any of myself back anymore. But I had to believe that she wanted to get to know me more than she was going to want to retroactively reprimand me, right? But when you're a youngster, I mean, you know, it's hard to see that actually panning out. And so I've kind of carried that through. And yet, with this portion, or I'm tapping my prosthetic and my hook, but, you know, at 30 years old, it was like coming to the gates again. Okay, who are you going to be? You know, and for 3 years, I didn't do an interview. I didn't do a podcast. I didn't do a written anything. I just tried to get back to my quiet life. And I realized that I was actually not fully healing because I wasn't communicating what I was feeling. And so through the encouragement of the surgeon that saved my life, he was like, you've got to share your story. Like, he was like, I became aware that if I was able to let this all out as a genuine article, then I would actually be able to start making progress forward. Otherwise, there'd be a part of me that would never heal and would just be stuck.
I got to give you a compliment here. Well, it's one of the biggest compliments personally right now in my life that I can give, but your desire for introspection, change, and then curiosity, inspires me. Your desire to dig deep within yourself to see these things, yes, as changes, to recognize. I have a great relationship with Honduras. I'm down in Honduras about 2.5 months a year for the last like 10 years of my life. And so the fact that you said a Honduran dishwasher has brought that out of you, that moment, that's cool to me. That excites me. Honduras needs more love. Yeah, your desire to change, your desire to keep moving forward, your desire to stay curious about yourself and about the people around you and how people will hear you and learn from you inspires me. So thank you for sharing all that. This is incredible. I know that people are going to be curious. I do want people to watch Charged. As you said, you can get it on Amazon Prime. But before we move into kind of the cool things going on in your life right now, because there are some awesome stuff, how did the accident happen? What did happen in the forest that how the voltage ran through your body?
I was out elk hunting, archery elk season. I was 3.5 miles from my truck in the hills, in the woods, in the mountains, however you want to describe them. I call them mountains. And I saw a metal can in a small drainage. Got closer to snoop around and check it out. And I saw that there was the remains of a small dead, long dead baby black bear in the base of the can. Being a Boy Scout and a person forever curious about the natural world, you know, my home is the home where there's an antler and a feather and a bone here. You know, there's a curio cabinet on every corner in the house, right? And so I thought nothing of taking a knife off my right hip pocket, putting it in my left hand, kneeling down, and I was going to pop a claw off the like dried and, you know, decayed hand that I saw of this baby black bear. And before I got within, I don't know, 20 inches of the base of the can, all I knew is there was a rock concert going on in my head. There was warm light and then a black curtain call. Wake up just like you kind of do in the morning. Anyone who's ever been in surgeries, when you come out of anesthesia, just kind of like all of a sudden the day just opens up and your eyes open. For me, it was really pretty simple. I noticed clouds. I saw blue sky and I wondered why I was on my back. I told myself, well, get up, you know, like, well, I'll get up. It was hard to get up. Felt like I was fighting through a dream, you know, like pushing against walls that pushed back, and finally was able to get to my feet. And then, you know, through determination, conscious determination, through I'm certain miracles I'll never be aware of, and just the fact that it wasn't my time, I was able to walk out of the woods and find a home where someone was able to call 911, and I was rushed to a jet center and then flown to Salt Lake City, Utah, where I spent the next 52 days in ICU. I still go back and hike in that area, still hunt. You know, I don't poke any more bears if I see them laying in a can in the woods, but in a nutshell, that's how I was electrocuted that day.
So I live in Denver, Colorado. We're archery hunters. Elk season is now past, another year, another blank slate for us. But what was in that can as hunters? I'm still, what was going on?
Yeah, great. So in the Rocky Mountain West, and actually throughout North America, you know, there's just human detritus and trash and leftover camps, dreams, and projects all over the place. And so I grew up well accustomed to seeing old sheep camp stuff, old mining camp stuff, old homestead materials. Sometimes there's a cabin a mile that way, but you're at the spring, and so there's a bunch of old rusty buckets that someone had to walk from there to there and left them there one day. And so I just saw a can that was like 2 feet off the ground by 30 inches around, and I thought it was a metal can that a rancher would put a salt block in, maybe cattle lease on National Forest. Didn't think much of it. But to your point, Ben, anyone out there rambling the woods ends up seeing a can that has no markings, no protected anything, no power lines nearby. Don't touch it. or if you need to get something out of there, use a stick. You know, don't go in with metal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good lesson. I mean, that's a good, that's a big lesson, because it's one in 32 years of my life I've never heard.
Yeah.
To finish up here, you have a lot going on. You have a partnership with the Magnolia Network. Do you mind explaining it?
I've been working with the Magnolia Network as a storyteller. You know, storytelling has long been something that I believe in quite deeply as a way to share and learn all at the same time. It makes me feel so alive to be able to connect with others, even in this scenario. And I get to share on the big screen and work across such a platform. It inspires me to wake up and do my best. It inspires me to really be conscious about why, where, when, and how. And so I'm excited for the show to find an audience, and for the show is called Zest for Life with Eduardo Garcia. And ultimately, it's almost a journey from charged. People are inspired by hearing how other humans make it through something. And so the premise of the show is that I would invite others, be guests, I'll cook a meal. Through the meal, I get to share my care and love for them and living. And the idea is to learn more about how they made it through a similar challenge in their life, so that to the viewers listening, we can share those skills, share that inspiration, share those tools, and hopefully lift all ships.
You've used this to continue to connect with those who have had similar experiences. You have you've given back. You've also partnered with. You've competed with the Challenged Athletes Foundation. That's correct, right? I've seen the videos of you running. I've seen the pictures on the website.
Yeah, I've always been interested in philanthropy. I've definitely been a caring individual my whole life, but. Coming out the other side of this injury has really asked me to think bigger, and working with Challenge Athletes Foundation to support people with physical disabilities to be active in their lives is a no-brainer, and really proud to be a part of that organization.
And First Descents, the tagline there is outliving it, which reminds me of something you said a little bit ago, that you would rather be outside cooking than you would inside at times. And so,
yeah, First Ascent is right there out of Boulder, Colorado. And as a cancer survivor myself, part of this last 10-year journey is also, you know, taking time to not only support organizations, but go participate, go get that healing that you need. And so I was able to attend a cancer surf clinic camp, meet other folks who have gone through cancer in their young adult lives. And how incredible, what a dose of medicine to be in the same room with other folks that can speak that language, that have walked that fire, you know?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of wisdom and lessons learned, I'm sure, in that group. And then also Montana Mex, still around, still exists?
Oh, yeah.
How can people check it out?
Yeah, yeah. No, Montana Mex is our food brand that really, we started 10 years ago as a farmer's market company. And these days we're in select grocery stores coast to coast. And, you know, our website, MontanaMex.com, is our home for anyone that wants to shop through our product and or check out our recipes, learn more about the story behind why does a chef develop a manufacturing food company and how that comes about. And it's beyond the passion project at this point. You get a message from one person about how your organic ketchup with no corn syrup not only tastes great, but they feel great serving it to their kids. And that really inspires you to keep showing up and why you're showing up, you know, not a numbers game. It's a heartbeat game.
Eduardo, we ask everybody the same question at the end of the podcast. First off, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and sharing all the lessons. Answer this question however you want. We've gotten answers from both sides, in between, all different ways. But the question we ask is, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I do believe hope still wins. And that is because when someone asks me, well, what is winning? I believe that winning is trying. If you're not trying, you're not even in the game. And so I feel like in order to have hope in order to believe in something, in order to hold on to even just the one thread, even though you got to collect a million of them, you have to start with one and you have to move off the needle. And so some of us are going to move off the needle because we're passionate. Some of us are going to move off the needle because we have faith. Others are going to move off the needle because we have all the support and backing in the world. And others are going to move off the needle because of maybe some combination of those or none of them at all, but also because they have a hope, they have a dream, they have a promise, and they believe in something. And so we have to start somewhere. We have to get out of our head and into the physical and put it in action. So I do believe hope still wins.
Eduardo Garcia, thanks for joining Hope Still Wins. It means a lot.
My pleasure, Ben. Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. That is it for today, my friends. Again, I highly encourage you to add Charged to your winter to-do watch list. And make sure to check out Eduardo's food company, Montana Mex, at montanamex.com. Thank you again for listening to this week's episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and let's talk soon.